Hello, and welcome to Jason Major's Sex Party. This podcast is dedicated to the idea that sex is not something to be discussed only in hushed tones behind closed doors. Sex is fun and good and something that you should share with other people, assuming they want to be part of that sharing, of course. Why do I think this? Because I'm Jason Major, and I have sex. I'm a cisgendered, heterosexual man who just turned 40. I'm polyamorous and consider myself to be an ethical slut. I'm completely honest with all of my partners, and I care about their well-being both physically and mentally. I'm a fan of group sex and play parties. I've had those threesomes and moresomes that you fantasize about, and let me tell you, they were mostly all pretty great. I look forward to doing it all again and again and again. Basically, I'm your average run-of-the-mill American pervert with one important exception. Unlike most of you quote-unquote normal people out there, I'm out and I'm proud about my perversion. I don't go waving them around in the middle of the street, but the things I do in private are not secrets. And look, you don't have to like it. You can even hate me for it. But I'm not going to lie to you about who I am, especially not because of what you might think about me. Sex is one of my favorite subjects, and I'm always eager to discuss it. So let's get things started, shall we? The theme of the party today is pain and suffering. Although I probably shouldn't say it with that sort of, like, joyful tone of voice. It was like pain and suffering. The theme of today's party is pain and suffering. I'd like to start the show out today by talking a little about BDSM. Seems appropriate for the pain episode. I'm not a huge fan of BDSM personally, but I can see the appeal. When properly done, a lot of it looks extremely sexy from the outside. However, I'm a giant pain wuss, so it's not much fun for me as a sub. And I prefer sex among equals generally, so the dom thing doesn't really appeal to me. I'm just not built for it. I remember one girl who I was dating, and she was very much into the rough stuff. One time she was on top, riding me, and she rather sexily asked me if I like hitting. I have been known to give a pretty decent spanking, and while it's not my particular favorite, I'm happy to oblige when asked. So I said, sure, why not? Next thing I knew, she had slapped me as hard as I had ever been slapped across the face, all while riding my cock and moaning in pleasure. All I could say in that moment was, As I was formulating the words to politely say, please don't do that again, it hurt very much and I didn't like it, she slapped me. Again. Harder. Thankfully, this time I was able to form the words, please stop that. But the better procedure would have been to come up with a safe word. I think we're all familiar with the idea of the safe word, but it seems like most people outside the kink community don't utilize this particular little bit of sexy magic to its fullest. The safe word concept covers key things that are often missing in a lot of partnered sex: safety and simple communication. So let's go through some safe word practices that can benefit everyone from the hardcore kinkster to a vanilla couple together for decades. First, what is a safe word? The safe word is a word or phrase that someone can use during sex to indicate distress of any kind. This device is especially useful in kink and BDSM contexts where someone may want to feel helpless and tied up while begging someone to stop, but not actually wanting them to stop. So you're strapped down and you're screaming, no, don't stop! But you're actually having the time of your life. With the safe word, you can pretend to be begging for mercy. But if something actually goes wrong and you need things to stop, then you have the safe word which ends the scene instantly. It's the ripcord to the consent parachute. One person says the safe word and everything stops, and all people involved discuss what happened and take care of each other. For the record, my safe word is watermelon. But a problem with the safe word concept is that some people sometimes feel self-conscious about pulling this emergency brake during sex. In BDSM land, I've even heard of shitty doms who suggest that a sub who uses their safe word is not a good sub. Frankly, I disagree with that idiotic douchebag idea, but it's out there and it can make people feel nervous about using their safe word sometimes. I've heard a few stories from people who felt pressured not to use their safe words for this very reason. Their partners made it clear that it was a turnoff and they didn't want to disappoint their partners. Frankly, this is shitty. And even if it were true for these douche nozzles, which I guarantee you it isn't, who gives a fuck if it turns you off? This is about safety. Being a good dom doesn't mean just being an asshole and doing whatever you want. Basically, if you do that, You're the kink community equivalent of a frat boy whining about blue balls to a freshman. But I digress. Getting back to safe words. Recently, I was introduced to an addition to the safe word concept that both solves the problem of bringing a kink scene to a halt and makes the whole shebang much more useful during even old, boring, missionary-style sex with the lights off. So, we have the safe word. That remains the same. It's a common word or phrase unlikely to be uttered during sex. Don't choose something like balls or moist. Although, moist is a pretty good safe word for a lot of people because it just sounds gross and that would kind of shut things down naturally. Moist. 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 Yeah, it's just a terrible word. So, you choose a common word, but something that pops out when uttered in a sexual context. Lampshade? Stereophonic? Cucamonga. When someone says their word, all action ceases immediately. Anyone who is tied up or restrained is immediately let free. The person or people involved will check on the individual who uttered the safe word and see what caused the problem. Sex is unlikely to continue, and the evening is most likely over. So this is a nuclear option. You pull this one when things are going south fast and you are donezo. But let's say you're not ready to end the evening. In those cases, we have the stoplight. The stoplight is something to be used in addition to your safe word. Safe words end everything, but the stoplight communicates great amounts of nuance with extreme simplicity. Most people around the world understand the implicit idea behind a stoplight, so the meanings of these words are even hardwired into us. When someone calls red, then that means that everyone stops what they're doing. The sex will likely continue in a bit if everyone is okay, but whatever is occurring right now stops, and people talk about what happened. Someone can call red for any reason. A line was crossed, or a trigger activated, or just something unpleasant occurred. Red is a slight pause, then things can continue once everyone is all good again. Like at a stoplight. If someone calls yellow, then that means caution. Careful with what you're doing, but go ahead and continue. When a person calls yellow, they're saying that they've reached their threshold or they're otherwise not fully enjoying what is going on right now. This works very well contextually. If you're spanking someone and they call yellow, then it's a pretty good assumption that you're spanking too hard. But the spanking doesn't have to stop. When someone calls yellow, the other person or people should feel free to keep going, but not push things any further or progress to a higher level. You step things back. This also creates a great moment for communication. Let's imagine that you were fucking someone from behind. You know that person likes having their hair pulled. You start pulling their hair and suddenly they call yellow. That's a perfect opportunity to find out what works for that person. You can say, too hard on the hair pulling? That gives them the chance to tell you more about what the issue was or how to do the thing that you were doing better in the future for them. But the yellow indicates a problem without requiring anything to stop completely. This way, adjustments can be made without interruption. I think this is great because nothing is worse than that moment, sometimes days afterwards, when someone pulls you aside and says, you know that thing that you were doing that was okay for a bit, but then it really started to hurt and I didn't like it and it was terrible. I've heard that before, and it just makes you feel shitty inside. So calling yellow removes any need for someone to grin and bear anything they don't enjoy grinning and bearing. It keeps the action going, but it lets your partner know that something's up. Finally, when someone calls green, they're saying, great job! More of that, please! Whatever is happening is not only enjoyable, but can go further. When someone calls green, the other person or people should take note and give more of whatever the person is receiving. I think this is one of the best parts of the stoplight safe word concept because a lot of people have trouble saying when they like something. Especially if you're not very vocal or you don't react much, then this is perfect for letting people know when they've hit the right spot. I think that when used thoughtfully, this stoplight form of communication can drastically increase the pleasure in partnered sex. What I see when it comes to all this communication shit is that people often feel overwhelmed. Pleasure and discomfort are complex concepts, but when you wrap love and romance around them, they become infinitely more difficult to express for a lot of people. Shorthand like the stoplight can ease the pressure to form full and complex thoughts at a moment when those don't tend to come very easily. When used properly, people are less likely to ping each other's insecurities or give in to passive aggression. It's communication at its most simple. You don't take it personally. You can't misinterpret it. It makes it easier to tell your partner what you do and don't like without getting embarrassed. Mark my words, This little sex hack will keep you from suffering through the pain of sexy time communication. Ugh. Kind of hate myself for that closer. What are you going to do? Write better? No. Coming up on the show today, two women with stories about how the female body can go rogue on you. So stick around. Carrie is a musician and music teacher in Long Beach, California. Last year, a health issue reared its ugly head and cut her off from her sex life. But I'll let her tell you more.
I'm Carrie Mock, and I'm a musician in Long Beach, California.
You have pain.
I have lots of pain.
What exactly causes the pain?
Currently, at the moment, 3 ovarian cysts and 1 fibroid tumor. All on my ovaries, so nothing on my fallopian tubes or my uterus. Although I have had a history with endometriosis, which is essentially the cells that are lining the uterus before menstruation, that for whatever reason, they don't know, can grow on the outside of the organs. And that's completely undetectable. Unless it's fusing organs together, sometimes they can see that. If you have
fusing organs together,
yes, and this is far more common than you'd think. I think what's the number? 1 out of 10 females in their reproductive years go have endometriosis.
Like a Cronenberg movie, basically.
Like it's freaky.
This is not your first sort of struggle with cysts,
right? My first known cyst was when I was 18 in college. I'm not going to blame it on 9/11, but it was right after.
Damn you, really, Osama bin Laden.
I was really stressed out. I was in the English class in college, and I doubled over in pain at the desk. I think we were sitting there, not a test, but something where we're all quiet and writing. So it was an in-class assignment of some sort. Suddenly I realized that I was in just panic because my body was seizing over in pain. And I was excused to go to the bathroom, and I didn't even make it. I was 2 inches out of the door of the classroom before I completely collapsed, and I crawled to the bathroom, which thankfully wasn't too far away, and it was on the same level of the building. But I crawled in, and then I don't remember much of the rest. I do remember end up getting to the far side of the restroom, but not actually in a stall, where another girl found me and called 911.
So this is not like a small, inconsequential amount of pain we're talking about.
No, yeah, we're actually talking about the same amount of pain as childbirth. Oh, and I've had some of those nurses said too, oh yeah, I've had a few ruptured cysts. It was far worse than childbirth.
Really?
Yeah.
So nurses who have had children have said...
Nurses have gone through both, and they've said, oh, yeah, the cysts are far worse.
What is an ovarian cyst exactly?
An ovarian cyst is essentially the husk of an unused egg. It's often women are able to release more than one. So normally during your cycle, you release one viable egg. It goes from your ovary to your fallopian tubes and into your uterus. If it's fertilized, that's baby. And if it's not, then it just flushes out with your menstrual system. Sometimes, especially if you over-ovulate, proto-ovulation, the husks or shells, what have you, end up staying on the edge of your ovaries instead of being drawn into the fallopian tubes, and it creates a growth. It's essentially an irritation.
Basically, the parts of your the eggs that would be flushed away,
yeah,
they stay there, and then they start to get infected and cause these cysts.
Yeah, it's kind of like an infection, more just kind of like, you know, like an ingrown hair, it's one of those, you know.
Inside your body,
something that you can't just go and dig out. Oh, that sounds so disgusting.
And so where exactly do you feel the pain? Where do you experience the pain?
It's surprisingly anal. It really feels like the urge to take a dump.
Really?
I know. It's incredible. It does also, you feel it on the sides of your pelvis, too. That's obvious. So,
I've eaten Chipotle. I've had that
experience. Yeah, of course. You know the pressure created.
How often are you experiencing pain?
Oh, all the time.
Constantly?
Oh, it's constant pain. Yeah. And most women, they go through severe insomnia for obvious reasons. I was on a steady stream of Vicodin all throughout the rest of college. That's what helped me sleep then.
And make friends, I'm assuming. And so what is your pain at today? I can see on your face
I'm suffering today.
You're suffering today.
I care so much about you in this podcast. So much. And the fact is, I don't know when that's going to change.
Oh.
It could be better by the end of the day. It's always a possibility. Right now, it's an 8 out of 10.
8 out of 10.
Mm-hmm. There's nothing I can do. If I went to the ER, there's nothing that they can do. Unless the sister of abnormal size, mm-hmm. they don't have that's no reason enough to operate. And generally speaking, since they're not life-threatening, including fibroid tumors, which are also not life-threatening, mm-hmm. usually, then you don't get surgery until it's big enough.
So you are dealing with constant pain that can go to an 8 out of 10? Like, what's the highest pain level you've probably ever had?
Goes to 11.
So this is like some of the most painful pain that you can have.
Absolutely.
And
that any human could have.
And there's nothing that they can do just
nothing.
Because it's not life-threatening.
Exactly. So the options are, the most popular option is hormonal birth control. Because it is actually somewhat effective for women, since it's usually a hormonal imbalance that causes these problems in the first place. And there are so many different kinds of hormonal birth control that if you try a couple different ones, chances are you'll find something that at least lessens the pain. Most cysts actually heal over on their own. So there is hope. Sometimes they do. Often they will rupture and then heal. And in my case, they will rupture and then they will just refill with fluid, and then they get bigger and then they rupture again.
I can't help but feel like if this happened to men, that this surgery, like, you could walk into your local CVS and get the surgery done.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. when I was in the hospital, in the ER, the number one response was always, don't worry, this is not forever. For most women, once you start having children, it tends to even out. Because if you're over-ovulating, that means my body is ready.
Well, that's a very simple solution, then. You just have to have a child.
Right, exactly. And this this problem, or quote-unquote solution, is awful. That's awful.
That's a tumor that will follow you around for the rest of your life, essentially. There is, I can wager that there has never been a problem that a man has had where the solution has been, well, why don't you just go have some kids and it'll be fine.
Yeah, I know. Actually, I had a really interesting experience with a roommate, a really, really good friend of mine, who passed a kidney stone.
Ooh.
We were roommates at the time. And doubling, you know, watched him doubling over in pain, rushed him to the ER, of course. His hand was fucking held. I mean, this was a hand-holding thing. By not just the nurses, but, like, the doctor. Like, the male doctor was in there.
Of course.
I'm sorry, you poor sir.
Like, people talk about male privilege, and this is, I think, a perfect example of male privilege. Is a man has any pain in his groin with his reproductive system, he is immediately rushed into the emergency room.
It's a private room.
It's a private
room.
No questions like the doctor,
asked.
Everyone is
not
fawning all over him. And the woman who's dealing with an 8 out of 10 on a constant basis.
We might as well in the lobby of the ER.
You're just told, suck it up. Walk it off.
Yeah, walk it off. Literally, in junior high, that was the case.
Go squirt out a couple kids and you'll feel better.
Yes, exactly. So he passed the stone, and we got home, and he spent the entire week, of course, laid up on drugs and all that, but he spent so much time apologizing to me, going, I did not even realize that you ladies go through this all the time. Like, I watched you go through a few ruptured cysts, and I thought it was just things that happen that heal over and whatever. I did not realize it was like somebody slicing open your junk. Since all of my other options have been exhausted, I have tried every kind of birth control, hormonal and not, didn't do anything. My plan right now is seeking a full hysterectomy, including my ovaries, obviously, which is called an oophorectomy. Now, I cannot stress the fact enough that any woman under the age of 30 is almost certainly going to be denied this surgery.
Why is that?
The explanation that is given to us is the subject of legal liability. However,
I have to assume that there's always a legal liability with surgery.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you're cutting into human beings. They don't just let you do that without any sort of liability.
Oh, yeah. No, that's absolutely true. Although this is minimally invasive surgery. This is a laparoscopy.
Hmm.
It used to be a heavy surgery, major surgery. But now it's outpatient and laparoscopic, and you only have to heal for about 2 weeks.
So then what's the liability issue?
The liability, as it was explained the first time, the paperwork I was given is... I feel like it's a lie at this point, but that some women sued their gynecologists because they requested it, were granted their hysterectomy or tubal ligation, both actually is kind of the same boat, and they sued their doctor later when they changed their mind about having children.
Because how old are you again?
I'm 32.
You're 32. So by asking for a hysterectomy at 32... Doctors are gun shy about giving that to you because they're worried that you're going to change your mind.
Yes, and that they will be sued.
It's not like anyone is getting a hysterectomy and they're going to be like, what the hell? I just wanted a teeth cleaning.
Yeah, I know, right?
So how does the pain that you're experiencing, how does that affect your sex life?
Oh, so negatively.
I can imagine. If it feels like you constantly have to take like a giant rage dump constantly, then you're probably not feeling super sexy all the time.
Yeah, it's so painful. It even hurts to masturbate.
Now, it hurts to masturbate. Right it there, hurts that to me is a reason to have surgery
at the very least.
That should be if you should be admitted to the emergency room, there should be a checkbox on the form that says, does it hurt to masturbate?
Yes. And actually, to go even further, sometimes it hurts to even be turned on.
Oh, really? So even like you see Clooney and it's just like...
I don't know. Looking at you does it for me. So, yeah, I haven't had sex in 2.5 months.
Ugh.
And I cannot be more clear to state that I love sex. I am a horny lady. Like, I love it. I love it so much. You know that little flutter you get when, you know, you're just reading erotica or watching porn? I love doing both. It's enough to cause that, you know, just kind of like the white hot searing. Like it's like a knife. It's a stab wound. It's a stab wound.
To your genitals.
To my genitals. And then there's the other side too, the diagnostic side, where if you're in this amount of pain, especially if it's your first time, you go into the ER or whatever, they do all the sonogram and everything. If they find a growth, they can usually tell whether it's something that they have to do a biopsy or something like that. But the attitude is cancer or pregnancy or nothing. So it's like, well, you don't have cancer. Aren't we happy? Now you can leave. No, excuse me, I'm still in an obscene amount of pain. But you don't have cancer, and you're not pregnant, so bye.
And yet again, I'm sure that if a man were to walk into a doctor's office and say, my testicles are constantly hurting me.
Yes.
Like, after they ruled out pain, or after they ruled out cancer, they'd keep looking.
Yes, exactly. Whereas with us, aren't you glad you don't have cancer?
You don't have cancer. Next.
Yeah, or this could be cancerous, but go get another pap.
It could be cancerous, but it's probably fine. I'll talk to you later.
I'm so jealous. It's not that I really, really want a penis. Not that I don't like them. I love them.
Hmm.
But y'all, you just get...
It's easier. It is significantly easier. From going to the bathroom through medical tests, everything is significantly easier if you have a penis.
Yes.
Actually, just the world in general is significantly easier if you have a penis.
Yeah. You lucky bastards, you.
If you live around Long Beach, you can book Carrie for music lessons, or even hire her string quartet to play your wedding. You can drop her a line at mockupstudios.com. That's mockupstudios.com. Having a baby is one of the most amazing things any human being is capable of. The miracle of birth is something that I think we all celebrate. Well, not me in particular. I'm one of those monsters who supports Planned Parenthood. Nothing I like more than a good abortion, right? But I digress. Not everything about having a baby is magic and wonder. Comedian Amy Clare wrote a little essay explaining her experience of gestating human life.
Do not believe the movies. Being pregnant is not sexy. It's not like that episode of some dramedy you watched where the pregnant lady just had to have sex with her husband, even though he was going to be late to his big hedge fund job, and she made him miss his big meeting to close the deal just so they could close the deal because her pregnancy hormones just couldn't be tamed. That has not been my experience. I have apparently also watched a lot of bad television. The only thing sex-related about pregnancy is that it is how I got here. Everything that has happened to my body has been special, and not in the I really want someone to touch me sort of way. I don't recognize my legs in the shower. Like, I don't know who they belong to. I was unaware that my wide, flat, Fred Flintstone Vienna sausage feet could become flatter and more sausage-like. My gums itch in this really weird, like, I can't scratch them sort of way, so I just poke them with my fingernail until they bleed, which I'm sure is very clean. I gave up the fantasy that I might just be a pregnant lady who was just all belly. I gave that fantasy up about 4 months in, when all the books suggested that I probably should have gained 10 pounds by now, and I'd gained 42. I get asked if I'm having twins at least 3 times a week, and I've started just saying, yes, but one died, and then I just walk away. I really do that. I've toyed with saying maybe now we have to let the living one eat the dead one, but thanks for bringing it up. But I might get fired if I do that, because it happens a lot at work. Don't get me started about how I pee my pants on the regular. I wet the bed, I pee my pants just standing there. It's a thing. Some of Logan's friends came over to bring us a bunch of baby stuff. And I was just like, oh my God, I'm just standing here peeing my pants in my living room. And I just like was like, excuse me. And I just went to the bathroom. It's weird. It's not like, oh, I didn't make it in time. It's just like, you're just peeing. Now, I'm glad that that actually happened early on in the pregnancy, because if it happened now, I'd be like, oh, my water's breaking every 5 minutes. I'd be like, my water's breaking, because I don't know what that feels like. But it's just that, it's just like water is just coming out of your body. It's fucking awful. Oh, sidebar, that being one of the many reasons I will never buy the I didn't know I was pregnant until my baby fell in the toilet BS, because if you didn't know you were pregnant, you probably would have learned that fact when you went to the doctor to deal with that mysterious symptom that you keep peeing your pants all day long. Not to mention that you haven't had your period in 8 months and your ass looks like a cottage cheese art installation. People who didn't know they were pregnant are certifiably insane. And they are lying. They're liars. Those people are liars. They're not. They are not truth tellers. They are liars. There's no way you would not know you were pregnant. Fucking crazy. As a stand-up comic, I've always included the sexual stuff in my stories because I think it is the best part. And anytime I've ever gotten a groan from an audience because I've talked about something really sexual, I've always found that odd. Like, for example, I used to talk about how I once dated a guy an entire extra 6 months just because he could roll me over and stay inside of me, which, by the way, is like a really good reason to stay with someone. That often got a groan, especially from an older crowd. And I Look, I grew up in the conservative South. I get that basically as a nation, we're a puritanical society. But sex is, in fact, the only common denominator in the sense that it's how we all got here. Like, somebody had to have sex to make you exist. So it's not dirty. It's what we're made to do. And I don't understand why people are uncomfortable talking about it. But pregnancy is not sexy. See what I did there? You get it? Nothing wrong with sex. But pregnancy is not sexy. Maybe it is for some people. Look, I can only speak for myself. I only know my vagina. But you know what might be, you know what might be sort of sexy about pregnancy is the boobs. Maybe the boobs. Because in the beginning, it's really spectacular how just instantly how full and big they get, especially when you're coming from a really low baseline. But mine hurt so badly, I could barely sit up in bed, much less let my husband touch them. But then my boobs turned into cartoons. Cartoon boobs. Like if you were an 11-year-old going through puberty, my tits would look like your first attempt at cartoon boobs. Like big National Geographic hot nipple boobs. I think hot nipples are really gross. You know, in Showgirls, she puts ice on her nipples. Like every nude scene on the planet, someone has iced their nipples or the room's really cold so it looks sexier. Big hot nipples are disgusting. It's like a thing I have against hot nipples. And that you're, when you're pregnant, your boobs are, it's just all hot nipple. Like really big and just not the opposite of sexy. I've talked to my girlfriends about this. They know what hot nipples are and it's gross. I also have super low expectations about how they're going to look after the whole ordeal is done. Like my expectations are really low for, like, I don't feel like it's just going to bounce back to cute boob. I'll be like, remember my cute boobs? Cute boob. Cause I've never had big boobs. And then like, now I realize all the benefits of that. I didn't need to wear a bra. They were perky. Everything was in its correct position. Now I feel like all that's going to go away. Well, it's already gone. I just have no idea once you have a baby on your boob for however long you're supposed to do that. I'm going to my breastfeeding class today. They'll probably tell me. I would just like to state for the record because I've been around so many people, so many pregnant people and so many people with babies. And I do not think that I'm special because I'm crafting a baby. It is so special, but it's like it's the thing we're built to do. It's the thing we've been doing. We've been doing this for like at least 20 years. It's like base level, just human function. So I don't think that it's a miracle that I'm pregnant. I don't find it to be a miracle. The miracle that I think is that this is my first pregnancy because I've had some dark nights. I've had some dark decades. Well, dark meaning, I say kind of to be funny. I mean, I think they were all awesome nights, but let's just say I was fairly certain I was barren. I have a girlfriend who, she was like, your vagina eats condoms. Because I had so many broken condom stories. I've taken many morning after pills. And I remember one time, the Rite Aid on Sunset in Fairfax, which used to be disgusting. Now I see it's gotten a makeover. But that was my neighborhood. And I remember one time, the first time I went, they didn't have the generic. And it's like a $20 or $30 price difference. And so I went again and to the same Rite Aid and I said, do you have the generic? And she said, no. And without even realizing it came out of my mouth, I was like, ugh, you never do. Ugh, because never do. I'll just take the expensive one. It's fine. Look, I have snorted blow off of a dude's dick. I have used a red promotional condom. I caught at a parade and I have fucked a guy with a tail. And now I'm going to be someone's mom. And the world just lets you do it. Like there's no paperwork, no tests to pass. Just you get to get pregnant, bring a baby into the world. And people tell me that I'm going to be the best mom
But how do they know?
I mean, do people have any idea what I've been up to? Because it is not very motherly. But I have followed all of the rules, and I have done what I'm supposed to do during this pregnancy. It has involved very little things that could be considered sexy, and it has involved even far less alcohol. So I have written this note to my future child. Dear baby, one day when you're a teenager and we're fighting about if you should have a beer, I would like to remind you of all the times I did not get to be drunk during my pregnancy with you, including but not limited to approximately 17 holiday parties, including my office party, which everyone knows should never happen sober, New Year's Eve, St. Patrick's Day, my wedding, 4th of July, my mother's funeral, and my 40th birthday. So please kindly shut your face. You can wait to enjoy that drink just a little bit longer. That being said, I've never been more excited to meet someone in my entire life.
Amy Clare is a new mother and comedian. She tweets some pretty consistently funny shit at Go Miss Amy Clare. Again, her Twitter handle is Go Miss Amy Clare, and Amy is available for some pretty inappropriate children's parties and bar mitzvahs. Watching the shit show that is the Republican presidential field in late 2015 is the very definition of pain and suffering to me. I actually kind of feel bad for these guys and one woman. Mostly because two things occur to me. Either they believe everything they're saying, in which case they are literally morons. Or, more likely, they don't believe the stream of bullshit leaving their mouths. In which case, they just want the job so badly that they are willing to publicly say things that make them seem like they are morons. I'm gonna include Hillary in that pile, by the way. Either way, it's terrible that we live in a world where the people who want to lead us feel the need to lie to themselves and the rest of us about who they really are. Being sex positive is all about accepting who you are, whatever that means, the good and the bad. Of course, obviously, no one in their right minds would accuse the Republican Party of being sex positive. Indeed, the Republicans seem to be doubling down on the sex negative stuff. Mike Huckabee and Ben Carson and the rest of those idiots, they all have their sights focused on LGBTQ people and Planned Parenthood and Tinder because of one simple reason. They're against consequence-free sex. They want disease. They want unwanted pregnancies. They want people to be afraid to have sex. They want people to suffer when they do have sex. But why do they want suffering around sex? Well, I think that the entitled patriarchal douchebag thing has a hefty influence. They don't have people protesting outside Google headquarters or the Vaseline plant. No one's talking about the dangers of Cialis. I think what it really boils down to is fear. Sex is an act of freedom. Those of us testing the limits of sexual freedom don't tend to be Santorum supporters. We have a slightly different definition of Santorum. They're both pretty shitty, though. But sex. The Democrats have long benefited from sex in this country. And I think that's where the Republican problem lies. I think that the free love movement in the 60s definitely helped move the needle on a lot of social issues. We all know that nothing sells quite like sex. Perhaps the attempt to control our societal norms is simply a ham-fisted attempt to keep us lefty liberals from opening those floodgates once again. Sex is a powerful motivator. If you have two social movements and one is offering you tax cuts and Jesus, while the other one offers you consequence-free oral sex from a person that you find hot, which one sounds more appealing to you? So the only card that they have left to keep the sex genie in the bottle is to double down on shame. All they can do is try to find or manufacture reasons for us not to have sex. Because they know that once people get that particular taste of freedom, then it's hard to get them back into the cage. Just ask the Indian government who recently tried banning porn sites and then had to back down after massive public outcry. People don't go backwards, sexually speaking. And once people are out of their little boxes, then they tend to start asking other questions, and all the GOP's trickle-down economics and repeal and replace bullshit starts to fall apart. The real reason they don't want you to come out is that they know that out people tend to end up voting Democrat. The reason they don't want women to have access to birth control or abortions is because they know that single women without children tend to vote Democrat. The reason they don't want gay and trans people to have full rights is because those people tend to vote Democrat. It's the same reason Republicans put in voting restrictions requiring IDs, then shut down locations where people can get those IDs in neighborhoods with more than 75% black voters. Because black people tend to vote Democrat. The current leadership of the GOP knows that we're all onto their bullshit. They know that their arguments are hollow or just outright lies. They know that it's only a matter of time before it all starts to fall apart for them. So they're squeezing every last drop out of the conformity bottle before it's empty. Meanwhile, us perverts continue to march on. We push for more honesty and openness and freedom. We urge people to take care of themselves and others at the same time, no less. We care more about the content of a person's character than their ability to conform. Plus, we fuck. And we fuck well. And that's a whole hell of a lot of fun if you're into it. Eternal salvation that doesn't really exist and low tax rates for the wealthy are all well and good. But can they suck my dick? Then they can suck my dick. Well, that's it for today, folks. Today's show was brought to you by me. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba, I'm loving me. I'd like to thank my guests, Carrie Mock and Amy Clare. You can find Carrie at mockupstudios.com. You can find Amy Clare on Twitter at GoMissAmyClare. Please visit MajorSexParty.com and like and tweet and tumble all over us on our various social media platforms. Search the hashtag MajorSexParty and we'll pop up. And subscribe to the podcast on iTunes so that you never miss any of this wonderful filth. You can listen to past episodes, including the live Major Sex Party panel shows that I do from time to time. They're a lot of fun. And hey, if you have any ideas for a story that you think would work on the show, please email us at story@majorsexparty.com. Again, the email address is story@majorsexparty.com. I will personally read every single email, so feel free to send in nude pics. Coming up on next week's party, we talk about gender. Will Jason fuck up pronouns for someone at some point? Tune in to hear the thrilling answer. Spoiler alert. Yes, I most definitely will fuck that up. So join the fun at Jason Major's sex party. I hurt myself today to see if I still feel. I focus on the pain, the only thing that's real. The needle tears a hole, the old familiar stain. Try to kill it all away, but I remember everything.